Republicans currently hold large majorities in the state legislature, 61 to 38 in the Assembly, 21 to 12 in the Senate. They also hold five of Wisconsin's eight congressional seats. With new legislative maps, the state Supreme Court is going to be drawing for the next decade. Those majorities may stay pretty constant. Earlier this week, the justices ruled they would take a, quote, least changes approach in a 4-3 vote. That means they'll use the existing maps as their starting point, and they say try to make as few tweaks as possible. Democrats not real happy about that. They insist that Republicans unfairly drew the current maps to their advantage back in 2011 and that the districts need to be more politically neutral. The courts have said even though the boundaries favor Republicans, they're not technically illegal. The maps need to be in place by April 15th of next year so candidates can start passing out nomination papers for fall primaries. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the way the Supreme Court is handling redistricting? Do you feel like you're properly represented in your district? Or do the boundaries not make sense to you? Do you have questions or desires of what you want to see come out of all this? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Rob Yablon is an associate professor of law at UW-Madison and a faculty affiliate with the Elections Research Center. He's faculty co-director of the State Democracy Research Initiative. Rob, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with this new ruling this week from the state Supreme Court saying, yeah, we're going to go with as close as we can to the old maps when we end up with these new maps. What do you think of that decision?
Well, so this is the so-called least change approach. And, frankly, I think that some of the legal arguments that the court made are tough to take seriously. This decision is very different from the approach that was taken by the federal courts when they drew Wisconsin's electoral districts in the 1980s, the 1990s, and the 2000s. And it's quite out of step with the way that a lot of other courts around the country have approached this issue. For the most part, courts have understood their obligation to be neutral arbiters to mean that they should not adopt maps that have a partisan skew. And instead, the court here seems to think that neutrality requires them to blind themselves to the partisan nature of the existing maps.
But as I understand it, Rob, under Wisconsin law, under the Constitution, partisan makeup isn't one of the guiding principles, right, in the drawing of these boundary lines.
So there is no explicit requirement under Wisconsin law that that partisan fairness needs to be taken account of. And so this is instead primarily a question of what the judiciary's role is as a map maker. And the norm in Wisconsin in prior decades was that when courts drew maps, they would reject plans that they thought had an evident partisan bias to them. And so this court is taking the legal notion that legislators are not required to consider partisan fairness and saying that that means that courts as well shouldn't have to. But that's a bit of a different issue. You know, courts as map makers sort of have different institutional responsibilities than lawmakers do.
Now, of course, courts are in this. They're not supposed to be, ideally. The legislature draws the maps. The governor can veto or approve them. The governor vetoed them. This has happened many times in Wisconsin history, of course. As you mentioned, it ends up in the courts. Why don't we have a system where it's supposed to work as it works as it's supposed to be, where lawmakers and maybe the governor negotiate out a map and keep the courts out of it?
You know, that's a great question. And there are some states where there's divided government, where the political branches are able to reach an accommodation. Now, the reality is that when the state Supreme Court telegraphs that it's going to adopt a map that is a least change map, that actually gives the political branches less room to compromise. I mean, there's not much reason for the legislature to negotiate with the governor if the legislature thinks that the court is just going to give it what it wants.
Now, there are, of course, two separate court systems. There's the state's court system, where our state Supreme Court has announced this decision. Maps in the past have been decided in the federal courts. The federal courts seem to be standing on the sidelines so far, Rob, though there are cases in front of them. What's going on there?
So as a legal matter, the U.S. Supreme Court has basically said that state courts have first dibs on this work if they want to do it. And in the previous decades, the Wisconsin Supreme Court basically was happy to stay on the sidelines. They didn't want to get involved in such a politically contentious case. And so that's why in the past, we had federal courts doing the work. But this time, because the state Supreme Court was willing to jump in, the federal court right now is sitting back to see if they indeed are able to adopt maps. If, for whatever reason, the state court isn't able to do it, if they decide at the end of the day that, you know, maybe they should have kept their hands off, then this will end up with the federal court as a final backstop.
Now, a key part of the majority ruling here from the state Supreme Court was to say the current maps were passed by the legislature, signed off on by the governor, and survived a lot of challenges in the federal court system. Made their way to the Supreme Court, bounced back down to a lower court. Ultimately, it all fizzled. So they've stood the test of federal court challenges. So why shouldn't the state Supreme Court go ahead and say, yeah, we'll go with this as a starting point?
Well, you know, an odd feature of the state Supreme Court's analysis is that it's using these decade-old maps as a starting point, but those decade-old maps had a shelf life. They were supposed to last for 10 years. They were adopted in 2011, and now they're done. And so to perpetuate those maps beyond that 10 years actually is not what anyone expected when those maps were adopted. What the law is that every 10 years, lawmakers are supposed to take a fresh look at the maps. And the political branches here didn't do that. And now the Wisconsin Supreme Court is saying it's not going to do that either. And in practice, that really functions as a windfall to the legislature. It extends the shelf life of these maps for another decade.
We're taking a look at what Wisconsin's legislative maps might look like once the state Supreme Court is done with them. Rob Yablon is an associate professor of law at UW-Madison, faculty affiliate with the Elections Research Center. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your reactions to this announcement from the state Supreme Court. Possible changes to the maps, the overall process, accusations of gerrymandering, or your questions. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're looking at new legislative maps and how they might play out in the state Supreme Court. In a win for Republicans, justices ruled this week in a 4-3 vote that they'd take a, quote, least changes approach using the current maps with big GOP majorities as a starting point. Rob Yablon is an associate professor of law at UW-Madison and a faculty affiliate with the Elections Research Center, faculty co-director of the State Democracy Research Initiative. And you could join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Nate is with us in Milwaukee. Nate, hi.
Hey, thank you very much for having me. I feel like somebody got to and broke the morality of Justice Hagedorn, who I was impressed with earlier, and I'll admit didn't vote for before, but I was actually going to because of what he managed to stand up for. And now I'm rethinking that. I also think of when you have stories of corrupt politicians basically taking what a lobbyist hands them and putting that sometimes word for word in a bill, and kind of wonder about this court case and the Will organization. I call it the Wisconsin Institute to Outlaw Liberty, which is exactly what they're trying to do right now.
Nate, thanks for the call. Nate, first of all, referring to Justice Brian Hagedorn and his past votes against some of the election challenges in the presidential election, Rob, he was viewed, I think, as a possible swing vote on this, actually signed a separate statement to go along with a majority. What do you see his role as being here?
Well, I think that he is usually considered the swing justice on the court. And I think that there probably were a lot of folks who were hoping that we were going to put these gerrymanders in the rearview mirror that are disappointed that he joined the majority here. He may still play an important role as the court chooses a final map. Perhaps he will be more willing than some of his colleagues to deviate from exactly what the legislature's wish list is. But, you know, that will remain to be seen.
And Nate also referred to, I think it affects concerns about accountability. If, say, lawmakers crib notes from a lobbyist's suggestions and put them right into legislation, as the example Nate gave. I know one of the accusations about gerrymandering is if you've got a safe seat, you can just kind of do stuff and not worry about getting voted out.
You know, absolutely. That's part of the classic critique of gerrymandering. What it does is it reduces electoral competition and thus electoral accountability. And if lawmakers don't think that they're going to be held accountable by the voters, then they don't have to respect the views of those voters.
Thanks for the call, Nate. We'll go to Don in La Crosse now. Hi, Don.
Hi. I'd like to know how many of these judges have been put into power by the Republicans, either dark money or money from Republican sources.
Thanks for the call, Don. And of course, Rob, we have nonpartisan elections in court races here in Wisconsin, but with every Supreme Court election, there's the Republican nonpartisan candidate and the Democratic nonpartisan candidate in effect, right?
It does seem like that is the road that we've gone down. And, you know, I think the funding that those candidates receive would reflect that. And, you know, I think that conventionally we think of our court right now, a 7-member court, and we think of 4 of those justices, although nonpartisan, as being more aligned with the state's Republicans.
Thanks for the call. Dave joins us next now in Toma. Dave, hello.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to see them just freeze the lines where they are, because I've listened to some of your other shows and everybody says, let's change them so they can be an advantage to this group or that group. And I think if we freeze it for a given extended amount of time, eventually things are going to change and nobody will be happy. But I think it's the fairest way to go. Just leave it alone and set a time limit where it's got to stay that way for a certain amount of time.
Dave, thanks for the call. Currently, it has to stay that way for 10 years, Rob, but can lines stay fixed over beyond that 10-year span?
So as a matter of federal law, they really can't. And the reason is that the Supreme Court decades ago said that legislative districts have to be equally populated, and populations shift. Every decade, we have a census that tells us the extent of those shifts. And in response, there is an obligation to redraw districts. Now, you could have a system in which you start off with a map that maybe everyone agrees is about as fair as we could do. And then from that point, maybe you do have a situation in which you try to change that map as little as necessary over time. But of course, you know, in Wisconsin, we're not starting from a neutral baseline when you think of the maps that we have on the books right now.
Dave's other point, though, however you draw a map, somebody's going to be unhappy about some aspects of it. How do you get a map that, even if you could make up a whole new system, a map that everybody thinks is reasonably fair?
Yeah, there is no such thing as a perfect map, and maps inevitably will create some winners and losers, some people who are happy and unhappy. And that actually is a reason why you might want to shuffle the deck every decade, at least if you do it in a relatively nonpartisan way. And so, maybe one decade you have a community that ends up being divided and they're unhappy about that. But the next decade, when you redraw the maps, maybe that's an opportunity to put that community back together.
Dave, thanks a lot for that call. And Rob, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
Good talking to you.
Rob Yablon is an associate professor of law at UW-Madison and a faculty affiliate with the Elections Research Center, also the faculty co-director of the State Democracy Research Initiative. We talked to him today about the Wisconsin Supreme Court's approach to drawing new legislative maps for the next decade. You can see more reporting on that at WPR.org and get lots and lots of background from the Mapped Out podcast from WPR News. And I think we've got a new installment of that coming out in not too much longer with a lot of updates related to what we just talked about.